time now for the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show. 30 minutes of nothing but hardcore hockey. The Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show is presented by Dave's Sports Shop, Pheasant Hills Golf Course, the Minnesota Wild, and MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. And now, with the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show, here's your host, Pete Wagner.
And welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show. Today, we have a jam-packed show once again for you. It's going to be Carol Evans' Dave Schwartz, as he's going to join us to talk about his upcoming articles, the Minnesota Wild, and much more. Moose Younghands from St. Paul Johnson just came off a successful 100th anniversary celebration. We'll talk about St. Paul Governor Johnson hockey. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then finally, we're going to close this one out with our very own Tim Kolomainen as we talk high school hockey and more as we get ready for the upcoming holiday tournaments. All that and more on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show.
Hi, I'm Neil Broughton here in Hammond, Wisconsin at the Pheasant Hills Golf Club, a favorite local course of mine in western Wisconsin. Located just a short drive from the Twin Cities, for its value and course layout, Pheasant Hills Golf Club is a great place to live. For 2013, enjoy country living on the golf course with large course lots available starting at just $25,000 per lot. For all details on golf course lots, call Ron Bonte at 715-796-2500.
Looking for a free skate sharpening or a free roll of tape? Come into any of the Dave's Sports Shop stores and just mention MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com and get either a free skate sharpening or a free roll of tape on us. Hurry in, as this offer is good for the first 200 customers.
Visit Dave's Sports Shop's three locations in Blaine, Fridley, and Stillwater. Dave's Sports Shop.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show. We're going to welcome in Carol Evans, Dave Schwartz. It's been a busy weekend in hockey and all sorts of things. Also, don't forget, upcoming this Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, live video streaming high school hockey from the Sports Authority St. Louis Park Holiday Classic will be live and online on MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com with all of the play-by-play of the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. Dave, it's been a busy weekend. We've got the holidays looming, but we still have time to talk hockey. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you doing? It has been busy. It's a good busy. Some great hockey being played at. I've seen some high school and some not as quite as good a hockey at the pro level, but some good hockey going on for sure.
It was a really rough pro level brand last night at the Madison Square Garden, and you know the interesting thing that Michael Russo was talking about was the confidence level of the Wild, how it's been shaken. You always often wonder, how can pro athletes have that happen, but you're around it every day, and it really actually does.
It does, and I mean, when you hear a guy like Zach Parise, who really is the leader of the team, say something to the effect of, I don't know what we have to do, we just have to do something different, not a good sign. He is the leader of this team, regardless of whether the fact that he wears the A instead of the C. He's still the leader of this team. And when a guy like that says, we don't really know what we have to do different, we just have to do something different, that is not a good thing for the team. Listen, these guys are good hockey players. They know how to score. They know how to put the puck in the net. But this just, things aren't going right now. And whether that's dealing with a couple of injuries, whether that's dealing with some shaky goaltending lately from Nick Backstrom. They're not doing what they need to do, and they have to be better in a hurry because these slumps are what kill you.
Well, the 23 goals scored in their last, what was it, seven or eight, whatever it was, road games just isn't gonna cut it. And being ranked number ninth in goal scoring in the National Hockey League, it's been an Achilles heel. And the irony is, this team has always had the label as being a low scoring group of players. Interestingly, when they had Jacques Lemaire, there was a period, I think they scored 250 goals one season. That was the year they won the Northwest Division title. So there have been some bright spots, but by and large, this organization's really been hamstrung by goal scoring.
And they've never been exciting. They've always been kind of a boring team, but they've gotten the job done in the past. And and they can still get the job done. We've seen it at times this year. This team has gotten the job done before, but they're not doing it right now, and something has to change. And if I knew what it was or you knew what it was, we'd make a lot more money. But Mike Yeo has to figure out what it is, and it hasn't worked so far.
Yeah, that's really Mike Yeo's problem. Now, your article I thought was great, Crossing the Line, and you're obviously talking about that Thornton-Orpik ordeal as really the impetus that you know really drove you to write. You know, why don't you share with us what really drove you and what your feelings are on that? And I think you and I could have a great discussion about it because I'm in complete agreement with you.
Yeah, you know, the column was about just how, and I've always been a big fan of the big hits in hockey, you know, the bone rattling checks and those kind of things. But what's been driving me nuts is I feel like we're getting to a level where it's just getting out of control. And you know, in this case where there's a premeditated act where Thornton skates over, grabs Orpik, throws him on the ground, jumps on top of him, and is repeatedly punching him in the head to the point where he knocks him out and gives him a concussion. It's just, that's not hockey to me. And that's what drives me nuts because I love the game. I love the game the way it is. But that isn't hockey. That's mugging. That's just, you know, borderline assault and battery. And it shouldn't be tolerated. It wasn't tolerated in this case, and he is going to try to appeal it. But I just don't think that should be tolerated. And I really think it should be handled very swiftly and very decisively because you don't want this to happen again. This is the kind of thing that needs to be nipped in the bud quickly so it doesn't get worse and it doesn't escalate from this because it could get worse and that's not something that's good for the National Hockey League at all.
Well, and I think really when you see that type of reaction when you're over a player like that and he's basically defenseless before he's even rendered unconscious and you really reach down and you jackrabbit punch him not once, twice, but was it three times? It was...
Yeah.
You know you've gotten the job done after the first, which really didn't need to happen in that situation. Has at any point, have these guys, has ever registered, friends or no friends, skating in the lockout, not skating, you know, feeling bad enough, has it ever dawned on them that Bertuzzi is lucky to be a free man right now with what he did to Steve Moore?
Yeah, and there's a lot, yeah, no kidding, that you bring up a great point. Yeah, it's cowardice is what it is, and I think that's what really drove me crazy about it is you're not taking on a guy and going toe-to-toe, dropping the gloves and giving him a free chance here. You grab him from behind, you throw him down, and you start punching him. That's not a level playing field. That's not being a man or playing tough hockey. That is a coward's way of going to get a guy, and I hope against hope that the guys on his team said to him, listen, we know what you were trying to do. I know you were trying to defend your guy, but you weren't doing that. That you're just mugging a guy out there, and that's not cool.
It's not. And, you know, the interesting thing is I've come almost 180 on the whole fighting thing here in the National Hockey League, Dave. And the big thing for me is I used to love the big hit. I still do, as long as it's clean now. I think some of it changes as the game has kind of matured a little bit. It's evolved. It has gotten more dangerous because I think the level of play is higher. The pace is higher. The equipment's more dangerous. It's more protected. Therefore, it becomes more of a weapon. And, you know, when I see guys square off to fight now, I've more come to the adage of, I hope nobody gets hurt. And I don't know if it's because I'm a soft old guy now or that I am honestly having an internal battle of whether I think it's even needed anymore. It's not needed in high school and college and junior, it shouldn't be, but it's not needed in those two levels. Why the other?
And I am too. And I think a lot of us are who have always loved this because, you know, Pete, the difference is we know more now. We know now that the punches to the face, when you fall over and smack your head on the ice, or when you hit a guy and slam him headfirst into the boards, that you're doing real lasting damage. That's something we didn't know 10 years ago. We didn't understand that. You know, we all knew, yeah, you get a black eye. Maybe you get foggy, they used to call it. It's a concussion. It leads to other things. And with CTE, we've talked about a lot in football now. But we know that. And now it really, you kind of reevaluate whether you do want to see these guys face off and bludgeon each other and then end up with a situation like, sadly, what happened to Derek Bougard and what will happen to others. It will happen to players that we know and that we have loved. Someday we will find out that it did irreparable damage, and maybe you know, they may end up having the same fate. We hope that it won't, that they won't have the same fate as Derek Boogaard. But the bottom line is, we know more now, and we're more educated. And I think if you have a conscience, then you understand that this just isn't. We shouldn't be watching it. It shouldn't be happening.
Well, so where does that leave us to, as members of the media, as reporters of the game, as fans? What type of thing, what kind of action plan can a guy like you or I have with this? Is it changing public opinion? You know, I know a lot of old school people will say, well, you know, that's not the way the game was intended. It's supposed to happen. It polices itself. And, you know, those are all arguments that I've made in the past. The different thing is, because you stated our knowledge, my arguments for that are hollow because I don't really believe in it anymore. What do you think can ultimately happen? And do you think the league will ever say, you know what, let's just scrap it? They've already gone to the face shields.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I've had this conversation with people before who I doubt that they will ever get rid of fighting in the game completely just because of what it brings to the game and the NHL. I mean, you cannot deny the fact that there is a portion of fans out there that watch the NHL, the CHL, the ECHL, and some of the minor leagues because they like to see the fights. And getting rid of it completely, I feel like, will provide a damaging hit to the league in respect to fans who people won't watch anymore. But what you can do is educate from the ground up, and I think that's already started with not tolerating fighting or any kind of punching at all in the younger leagues, and educating kids on what's going to happen when, you know, in a couple years as you take the hits, as you decide to fight. And when you start from the ground up, and then those players start to come up into the leagues and the culture is changed. That's what has to happen. The culture has to change at a younger level so that by the time they get to the NHL, it's not something new. And that's what has to happen. And the only way for that to happen is for coaches and parents and media and everyone else to continue to preach that this is not something that will be healthy for you in the long run. It's something that's got to come out of the game.
What's your next piece on?
I'm toying with it, but I'm going to delve into the shootout rule in the NHL. And I know I am in the minority. I know a lot of people don't like how it currently is, but I still like the shootout. I know we've talked about the point and that kind of thing. And should you get the point for the shootout, or how should the point system be structured so that you're not just winning on a shootout, or you get more points for winning in regulation because that's the entire game. And then we'll also probably explore the way that shootout is being introduced into the Big Ten Hockey Conference. I won't give away my opinion on that, but I will tell you that the NCAA does not recognize shootouts. The Big Ten does. So that's kind of an interesting quirk as to why they might do it or what the point is. But we'll talk about that in the column.
You know, I love this format that you and I have. You're creating really awesome talking points from which not only you can write your piece, but now we're kind of expanding on it, and I'm enjoying the heck out of this. So I can't wait to get back at our next topic, my friend.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Dave, you too. Have a great holiday here. We'll talk to you quickly next week.
All right, Pete. Take care.
You bet. Carol Evans, Dave Schwartz on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show. When we come back, it'll be Moose Young Hands of St. Paul Johnson. Big 100 anniversary that came up. That will be a great one to talk about. A lot of rich tradition and history. All that coming up right after this. Ever since I was a young boy, I played the silver ball. From Soho down to Brighton, I must have played them all. But I ain't seen nothing like him.
Hi, I'm Neil Broughton. For all your Minnesota hockey needs, go to MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com, the best one-stop online source for all your Minnesota hockey coverage and information.
Hey everyone, I'm Ann Carroll from MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. For all your hockey equipment needs, come here to Dave's Sports Shop in Stillwater. This is Scott with Dave's, and Scott, this place is really all you need to know when it comes to getting outfitted for the hockey season.
Yes it is, Ann. We start from the Might hockey player all the way to the girls hockey players, all the way up to the pros.
Wow.
They even bring their skates here for skate sharpening.
So for shin guards to sticks, make sure you stop by Dave's Sports Shop here in Stillwater.
Zach, Sammy, and Cole all have a very special wish. We're making those wishes come true. Hi, I'm Brian Dennehy. I want to be sure that you know about a very special wish-granting organization, Wishes and More. We enhance the life of a child fighting a terminal or life-threatening condition by providing extraordinary experiences and more. If you know of a child that we can help, or if you'd like to help us make wishes come true, please contact us. Thanks.
Welcome back to the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show. We have a very special guest, Moose Younghans, the what I would call father of St. Paul Johnson hockey, the man who really keeps the pulse moving for the proud tradition that it is. We all know about the state tournament runs and the 22 appearances, the state titles. I believe they're the first Metro team to really wrestle that away from what was a stronghold on the Iron Range for years. And, you know, he's carried the torch and done a great job. Obviously, the 100-year anniversary came on Saturday with the Silver Skate. That's what it's called, right, Moose?
Bronze Skate.
Oh, I'm sorry, check that. Yeah, with South St. Paul.
They still got it, though. That's the problem.
How are you going to get that?
We lost. We tried to get it back, but we didn't get it back.
I was going
to
say, how are you going to get that thing back? You going to wrestle that thing away from them?
No, we're going to get it back next year now. We can't get it back anymore this year. We'll give it another roll next year.
Well, that's terrific. So the 100th anniversary was this year. And you know, in the article that Brian Halverson wrote on your program, you seemed a little surprised that it was taking off the way it was. How did the thing start, and how big did it grow to?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I was surprised with it, but it was, because it got so big. You know, we started working on it about 6 months ago, and, you know, we have a real strong tradition with our alumni and things like that, and we kind of got the word out there. And, you know, as we got closer and closer, it kept growing and growing. And by the time we played the alumni games in the morning on Saturday, we had 240 guys that played in the alumni games. We had five games with, you know, like almost 50 guys in every game.
That's amazing. And these are guys that range from all sorts of different ages, correct? How far back did you go?
1961.
Wow.
All the way up to, you know, to 2013. And the other part about that was incredible was every game, the bleachers were completely full, and then they'd empty out, and then a whole new wave of people would come in to watch the next game. So all their families came, and they brought their kids with them, and, you know, I saw people that I haven't seen for years, grandmas and grandpas, and it was just a special, special day.
You know, I think there's a big, big chunk of what's great about high school hockey is the passion it brings, the rivalries that are there, whether it's East Side versus West Side, North versus South, or North versus Metro, South versus Metro. And I, at the end of the day, there's always a mutual respect for the traditions of the game, which have made it so special. What is it about St. Paul Johnson hockey that is so special?
I think it's important in our program to our kids, number one, to understand the tradition of our program. They, you know, it's in our building, it's everywhere, it's on the walls, it's you know, up in the rafters with all the banners and things like that. Our kids understand that, and I also think they understand the fact that, you know, somebody's always watching them, and we always tell them that when those little kids watching these games, someday they want to be you. So make sure that you carry yourself properly, because it wasn't that long ago you were standing on the side of that glass and, you know, and wanted to do that. So I think our kids understand, and I also think that our kids know to respect the game, and they love the game. I think most kids in Minnesota growing up, I think you're growing up, you want to play in that state high school hockey tournament, you know, and that's always, I think it's everybody's goal on the first day, but when it's all said and done, I tell the guys, you know, it's not about the game, it's about what it represents and, you know, what it does for you in your life.
And without it, what else is there? I mean, you can always be drawn to other things, and I think what it does is it keeps kids with a straight focus on the positive things in life. And, you know, the challenges that you have, obviously, are what many of us out here have. Money drives the game, let's be honest. It's gotten very expensive, and I think it's difficult given some of our areas to keep the numbers up to be competitive. How have you dealt with that from a youth hockey perspective?
Well, you know, our youth program is kind of is shrinking as we move along. We merged with Como a few years back, and now we're down to the situation where we only have one Bantam team, and it's a B-Bantam team, and we have two Pee Wee teams and two Squirt teams, and, you know, we're just it's tough to deal with, but we're trying to
you know, we do the Let's Play Hockey, the Play Hockey for a Day for Free, and we did some of those types of things. And we've got real solid leadership in our youth program, and we try to be as consistent as we can. But I just don't think you can, certain parts of the battle, you can't win them right now. But we're going to just keep doing what we're doing and try to, you know, always offer good things for kids, and hopefully we can keep it alive.
You know, I've always said running the Hopkins Youth Program, our biggest issue is obviously we do the Try Hockey for Free with the Let's Play Hockey setup too, and, you know, those types of things. To not only get them into the game, but to get players to retain them, to stay with you. That's the most difficult part, I think, is keeping them in the game and staying with it. Have you had the same experience where you've been focusing on that, or has that been pretty good on your end?
No, there's no doubt about it. You know, but I think it comes down to commitment, and it's the toughest commitment when they're young is the commitment that the parents need to make. You know, it's not like taking them and dropping them off at the rec center and picking them up 2 hours later. You know, one night you might have to drop them off at Fail Arena, but the next night you might be going to North St. Paul. The next night you could be going to Woodbury. And, you know, it takes a little bit more of a commitment. So until, you know, I don't want to say get them hooked, but until they've done it a couple years and realize, you know, what it's all about, it's, you know, it's tough to make that commitment.
To look back on the 100th anniversary day, what was the biggest takeaway that you took from it? When you woke up Sunday, what did you say to yourself about it?
I said, wow. You know, that's the only thing I could think. I mean, we had the alumni game with all those guys, our high school game, the Aldridge Arena was full of people for that game, and then we had the reception that night, and I'm guessing the crowd was over 700 people, and to watch how they interacted with each other, and just like it was old home week, and, you know, just guys taking pictures of other guys from their class, and, you know, hadn't seen each other for years. I mean, I don't think you'd ever duplicate it, and I told a lot of people beforehand, I said, you don't want to miss this, because it'll never happen again. And I'll tell you what, everybody that I've heard from since, that you were right. It will never happen again like it happened on Saturday.
Did you feel as though there was some momentum from some of the alumni saying, you know, committing to saying, hey, you know what, we need to do this, this, or this? Did any of that type of thing come about from that day?
Nope. But I do think that there's some guys that are recommitted now to the program and will be re-engaged because of what they saw. I think they read a lot of negatives in the paper about the east side of St. Paul, you know, not understand what's really going on, but they came back in the rink for the first time. They saw how nice it looks in there. They saw the pictures and all the memories that are there, and then they came to the game, and we didn't win the game to watch our guys play as hard as they play and try to represent. And then that night at the banquet, we made a video that did all 100 years, captured all 100 years of hockey, and, you know, I'll tell you what, I bet you it wasn't dry in the place when it ended.
Do you have that? Is that video available by chance?
Yep, it'll be available just for sale coming up. We're going to start taking orders here right after the first of the year, but it was just an awesome video.
Well, here's what we're going to do, and since I run the high school side of things on the Minnesota Hockey Mag, I'm going to overrule our good friend Scott Tiffany. What I'd like to do is put a purchase banner up. If you're going to have, are you going to take online purchases or a place where they could email to get it? We'll do that for you.
That'd be awesome.
Okay, great. One final thing from your squad. Why don't you fill us in on your team right now? How do you feel about where they're at and how they're progressing so far this year?
Well, you know, we're playing with two seniors and four juniors. The rest are sophomores and freshmen. And, you know, we got off to a pretty good start. We started out with 2-2, and now we lost the last four games. We're playing teams that are just a little bit bigger and a little bit deeper than we are. But you know what? They come to the rink every day. They work as hard as they can. We've got an outstanding goaltender in Sam Moberg. He's only a sophomore. He's already played 60 varsity games. He played every game as an eighth grader, every game as a ninth grader. Now he's there again, and he's been real solid for us. And, you know, our guys, I'll tell you what, we blocked 25 shots the other night against South St. Paul. So we're playing hard, you know, and I'm real happy with them. Our goal is to play as close to 500 as we can and beat somebody that we're not supposed to beat along the way, and we're still probably going to do that too.
And you always will, absolutely. And you know what they always say, you develop with underclassmen and you win with seniors, so you bring those guys and they have their day in the sun, and I'm certain your team and program will for sure.
Well, we're proud of our kids and we're proud of our program, and you know, the last thing somebody asked me, how do you feel about your program? I said, we're alive and well, and we couldn't be happier on the east side of St. Paul right now.
Awesome, and we could be happy to be a part of it too. That was a great day, and congratulations to you and your efforts, and keep it going. And I know you have a ton of admirers out here for what you do for hockey. It's outstanding, Moose.
Well, let us know if we ever do anything to help you guys out, because we appreciate you guys being there. You guys, I know Scott pretty well, and he came out here. I work at Strauss, and they came out to our anniversary tent sale. I always talk to him all the time, and I love what you guys are trying to do, and you guys promoting hockey, and I think that's going to help all of us in the long run.
It's fantastic, sir. Thank you. You have a very Merry Christmas, and we'll talk to you around the bend here pretty quick.
Same to you. Thanks for calling.
All right, you bet. Moose Younghands from St. Paul Johnson. We'll be back with more on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show right after this.
Everyone, I'm Ann Carroll from MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. For all your hockey equipment needs, come here to Dave's Sports Shop in Stillwater. This is Scott with Dave's, and Scott, this place is really all you need to know when it comes to getting outfitted for the hockey season.
Yes, it is, Ann. We start from the Mite hockey player all the way to the girls hockey players, all the way up to the pros.
Wow.
They even bring their skates here for skate sharpening.
So for shin guards to sticks, make sure you stop by Dave's Sports Shop here in Stillwater.
Hi, I'm Neil Broughton here in Hammond, Wisconsin at the Pheasant Hills Golf Club, a favorite local course of mine in western Wisconsin. Located just a short drive from the Twin Cities, for its value and course layout, Pheasant Hills Golf Club is a great place to live. For 2013, enjoy country living on the golf course with large course lots available starting at just $25,000 per lot. For all details on golf course lots, call Ron Bonte at 715-796-2500.
We're back at it once again on the Minnesota Hockey Magazine radio show. We promised you Tim Kolomainen, but we might have upgraded. We're bringing in our very own Bart Archer, who was on the color commentary call. Bart, you had the bird's eye view of three hockey games. We'll actually make it six, but four hockey teams that were really, really very good. What was your impression first? The Elk River Elks come out of that thing, and they're 0-3, but I'd like to think that they played the game really the way they wanted to, but just didn't get the result.
Well, I think actually Elk River was playing very, very well going into that tournament, Pete, and it's a team that can skate like the wind. Watching Jake Jeremko bring the puck through the neutral zone is a treat, but a very quick team that passes the puck very, very well. But I think they were just unfortunate that they just didn't get the breaks that they were looking for. But a very impressive outfit up there in Elk River.
And then you move along to the Grand Rapids Thunderhawks. You look at the goaltending situation for all these teams, and I don't think it's hard to say that there's a peer to Hunter Shepard at this point in the game from what we saw. That 60-save performance against the Edina Hornets in that 4-3 overtime loss, I'm not trying to be harsh here, but it's very difficult to say that Grand Rapids team had any business being in that game if it weren't for the play of their goaltender, Hunter Shepard.
Well, and not only was it over 60 shots, Pete, but there were about 15 to 20 shots that actually went wide, and there were three posts that were also in the mix as well. I think that they just got kind of congested in their own zone, but Edina, really a buzzsaw at that point, just kept coming and coming. And you're right, if it wasn't for Hunter Shepard, that game could have been a blowout, but that's what good goalies do. He faced a lot of shots, but again, Grand Rapids is a pretty good team. I just think they ran into a team that was awful quick, and they didn't know how to handle it quite so well, but I'm sure they'll make adjustments.
Well, the thing that stood out to me, too, is that Avery Peterson, obviously, the Wild draft pick, he's back for high school. He played a little bit in the USHL in the first 10 and the last 10 or the close of the season as well as what he's going to do, but he's being checked, and there's not a lot of room for him to work. He's working hard to fight through that. I think at the end of the day, that makes him a better player.
Well, and I agree, Pete. But, guys like Jonah Bischoff, I just don't think he really got into the mix as much as they're used to. But, again, they defended quite well, and it just seemed like Edina's defense really was pretty impressive, and as the other ones were through the course of that tournament as well. But I thought that Avery Peterson was a little bit on an island and tried to do so much by himself. He didn't get the support, I think, that they really wanted going into the tournament. But, four good teams in this tournament. I think Grand Rapids just kind of finally started as the tournament went on, finally started to get their legs about them, and they really had a good finish to that tournament, but I think that first game kind of set them back a little bit.
Well, they're in a position to win that one, and it didn't happen. Then they came back with a tough one with the Eden Prairie Eagles, but the fact is the one that really, really mattered to them was the Section 7 AA implications with Elk River Elks. If they continue to win out, they put themselves in a good position to have a favorable seed, which does matter, in my opinion, when you have some very high caliber teams like the 7AA does have. So what I saw from that team was the ability to continue to be resilient, bounce back, never quit, keep playing. They looked a little bit tired to me off the bus, perhaps, on the first game against Edina. Didn't quite have the jump that they did on Saturday. So if I'm John Rothstein, I'm liking the fact that my club got better as that series of games wore on.
Yeah, and it just seemed like it was a different team on Saturday night than it was on Thursday and Friday. But, again, to end the tournament against that competition on a positive note is good for Coach Rothstein and the Thunderhawks. We're going to hear from them as this season unfolds. But, yes, a nice finish. You could see the energy at the end of the game and the relief that they came out with a win.
For the Elks, I still feel like they're a top-10 team. Didn't get the results they looked for. I thought they played terrific hockey. I can't say enough about Jake Jeremko. Zerbin was very good. I thought Chase Springman was really, really good in his game. The games we've done with him now have really been impressive. I think he's great. And their defensemen are so solid.
Yeah, I think Springman is the person that doesn't get enough accolades for what he brings to the table. He really is good at zone entry. He comes on the off wing, he gets the shots, but he does the little things well. Zerbin was very effective. Jeremko, kind of the person that pushes the pace on that team. But Elk River, I think that they were rated a little high. That's not their fault going into it, but I think that's more of a 4, 5, and 6 team than a 2 team coming in. So maybe they got a little ahead of themselves, but they really showed the people that came what kind of brand that they play. And it's a very impressive brand. I think Gordy Roberts really does a good job, but they move the puck so, so very well. And again, like you said, the 7AA implications are there. But Elk River obviously going 0-3 during that weekend against strong competition. I think there's room to improve, but they're a very impressive team overall.
Look at you calling me out on ranking them number 2. I love it. I love it. Well, yeah, you know, they definitely had some quality wins. And when you're undefeated, it's performance-based in my world. So they lost, and now they're down to number 10 in this week's ranking. So it is what it is. It's their chance to move back up. Eden Prairie Eagles had their 7-game unbeaten string snapped as they lost the Edina Hornets, but they were very good in their first 2 games. We saw a lot out of Steven Spinner, especially in Game 1 and Game 2, was really stifled by Edina. Again, I think the moral of the story is yes, you know Snuggerud and you know Spinner are going to be very involved in the game. I think in the Edina game, if you're the Eden Prairie coaching staff, you needed to see your supporting cast step up because the Hornets really did suffocate down on the big 2 players who still had their chances, plenty of them, but they couldn't quite get anything really going at a sustained level.
Well, sometimes when you have the type of talent that Steven Spinner has, you try to get a little bit too fine. You try to pick corners at the just the precise areas. I think if you just would have relaxed and unloaded a little bit, put a lot of weights on that young man's shoulders. And I think that they really played Edina pretty well, but they just had one bad period, and that unfortunately was a third period. But I think that Edina forecheck and the team speed and positioning was just exceptional. So obviously their work was cut out for them. Edina just looked very, very impressive. But Eden Prairie coming in unbeaten, they were due to kind of get a little bit of a hitch in the giddy up. But I thought they played pretty well the first 2 periods. The third period, Edina took over. And it wasn't that they didn't have the opportunity. Edina put them on the power play for several minutes. But a good penalty kill by Edina. I just think they try to get too fine with their shots. And as a stand, I don't think Snuggerud could really get out of the zone with any efficiency. And I think that changed the dynamic. And Edina took that away. And I think it had a ripple effect.
I think the fact is that 17 total minutes power play time. A minute 26 of 5-on-3 and a 5-minute major. If you can't convert in that situation, go 0-for-7 with the man advantage, it's very difficult to win a hockey game, and I think that's really what happened. Credit Andrew Rokol and goal for the Edina Hornets, who was very good, but more importantly, the best player on the ice, I think, all night long was Dylan Malmquist, as he was a terror. He was all over the place, but his penalty-killing skills were unbelievable. Hornets pop a shorty. He's creating chances and really disrupted what the Eagles wanted to do with the man advantage.
And I think his positioning and his anticipation was exceptional. Dylan Malmquist, when he first came into the high school ranks, he was a sniper, kind of a shooter, but now he's more of a well-rounded game. He has great vision on the ice, but the anticipation and his speed really kind of put the Eagles on the defensive when they should have been on the offensive. But he was very, very impressive as that whole line was. In fact, I was very impressed with that second unit for the Edina Hornets. I thought they were very impressive all weekend long.
It comes down to this. The rest of the high school hockey world has to deal with the fact that I do think Bart, at some level, with the depth and the ability of the Hornets, Masterman was really good. Kiefer Bellows impressed me very much in that hockey game. You'll go up and down the lineup. Fiddler has now in the teens with his points. And, you know, he and Munson had modest point totals throughout their first 2 years of high school, the sophomore and junior level. And this year they're playing like seniors. They're playing big. And the depth on that team is pretty legit. And I think you need to bring at least two solid lines if you want to beat that team. So I'm here to say it from this point. Yahill Murray's undefeated, but they haven't played the level of competition that an Edina has. Yeah, Edina does have two losses, one of them to Egan, and the other one to, who was it, Bart?
Elk River.
Elk River, that's right. You put those together, you know, it is what it is, but based on those three games in a row, that team looks pretty dialed into me, and it's going to be a difficult one to deal with. Keep your eyes on the Hornets.
Well, absolutely. And when you look at the Mastermans, you look at the Fiddlers, you look at the Munsons, they were secondary scoring last year because the responsibility was obviously on the first line. Now they're moved into the primary role, and they're actually relishing that. And I think the Kiefer Bellows line is taking the pressure off them, opening things up. But Fiddler is so smooth, and Munson works so hard, and Masterman shows that he's got some offensive savvy. So, you know, they can come at you with a couple different flavors, and it makes it more difficult for the other teams to defend. So this is a team that I think pleasantly surprised a lot of people and disappointed some people that might not be pro-Edina. But this is one of the quickest Edina teams, I think, that I've seen in probably, you know, 5 or 10 years, Pete.
I think they're deeper than everybody imagines, too. Bart, it's going to be a great week of hockey. We've got the Schwann Cup all over the place. We got, what, about 80 brackets of that? No, about 5 or 6, whatever it is. We've got the Sports Authority St. Louis Hutt Park Holiday Classic that you and I will be at with our various broadcast teams, webcasting that in its entirety. You've got Blaine in the house. You've got Bloomington Jefferson, Benilde St. Margaret's, Maple Grove. You have Moorhead. You've got a lot of good hockey teams. That will be Eden Prairie is there as well. That will be duking it out there. So be sure to check that out. We'll have another program coming up next week, the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show. Bart, thanks a lot for joining us here today, and we'll be catching up with you later.
It was my pleasure. Happy holidays to everybody.
Absolutely. That'll do it for this edition of the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Radio Show. We'll be back with next week with another program. So long, everybody.
This has been the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show. The Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show has been presented by Dave's Sports Shop, the Pheasant Hills Golf Course, the Minnesota Wild, and MinnesotaHockeyMagazine.com. This has been the Minnesota Hockey Magazine Show.